Man, that's when it kicked off.
I'd say, yeah. Yeah, it was about just a couple of weeks after that, after our show, and then bam, country goes to hell.
Let me just do a quick intro so I can cut it up and then I'll go into what I was saying.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the Smoke Pit Storytime Podcast. Haven't done a little intro for a show in a while, but we've got a returning guest, Pastor Steve. He's coming back again to talk about the spirit of fear. How you doing, Pastor Steve?
I am good, man, and excited to be here. I appreciate it.
Oh, yeah. This is great, and I think this is the direction I want to focus the show on. And like I was telling you earlier, when I decided that after our first episode together, definitely had some spiritual warfare, had to deal with some depression and anxiety, and started to question if I even wanted to do the show anymore.
I hear you. Yep.
And I talked to my wife about it. And she said, basically, if you're taking flak, you know you're over the target.
It's true.
And so, yeah, here we are. I know our last episode was more or less kind of your backstory, and we covered how voluntarism, for the most part, is more in line with Christianity than our current state. Yes. And we all know that the foundation of any government is chaos.
Yes, and, it is.
And the feeling of chaos is fear.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people think that the opposite of love is hate, but it's not. The opposite of love is fear.
Yes.
And fear is the chaos agent. And so, you know, some that might hear this that, you know, aren't believers, but you know, the devil is an agent of chaos.
He is. And that's the whole beginning of the first chapter of the Word, is the idea that God wrestles chaos and brings order to it.
Right. And so, you know, I know I wanted to bring you back and talk about the spirit of fear, and because we see it now. You know, 2 Timothy verse 1, Second Timothy 1:7, for God hath not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind.
Amen.
To be a well-rounded person, you have to have that confidence. You have to be a loving person, and you have to be clear, level-headed thinking mind. And fear will make you hate. Fear will make you feel weak. And then fear will make you act irrationally.
Yeah, it does. And you can look in the country right now and see, you know, just the effects of fear on every side of every issue. It's not just a liberal thing right now. This is a full on, the entire earth is melting down.
Human condition.
People are just reacting to the chaos, whether it be chaos that's been in their life and has boiled over, or whether it be something that people are perceiving as chaotic and causing turmoil in their life. I mean, they're just reacting to it. It's really funny. I don't really get into a lot of politics. I try to avoid it because I actually have not a hatred, but a disdain, I guess would be the right word, for the mixture of Christianity and statism. It really bugs me. So I try to avoid as much politics as I can. But one of the things that I have found interesting is the solutions. So, you know, we have the tragedy that takes place in Minneapolis with the gentleman that was killed by the police officers. And then, of course, the protest and then the riots and so forth. And then you end up getting some knee-jerk reactions. And so what happens is chaos kicks off in your life. And when chaos kicks off, you have that fear. And as you mentioned in 1 Timothy or 2 Timothy chapter 1, that fear is the opposite of power, love, and a sound of mind. It runs contrary to it. And so you end up with knee-jerk reactions when you are reacting out of fear. And those knee-jerk reactions then end up creating more chaos, which causes more fear, which then causes more people to react with knee-jerk reactions. And so nobody's sitting down and thinking through and really considering what are the ramifications for this action. And is that what our goal is, and so forth. And so it's just chaos begets chaos begets chaos. And right now, everybody in the country seems to be terrified of some boogeyman.
Yeah, and you saw it even before George Floyd with the COVID-19.
Yep.
You saw how the government and different, health organizations used fear to achieve compliance.
Yes.
I made a meme, it was months ago, it was probably mid-March, and it was the Rick and Morty where he's tearing the wallpaper off the wall to reveal what was behind it.
Right.
And I put the words, fear is the real virus.
Yes.
So you already had people in an amped up state of fear of a disease, of which now there's health organizations that are saying that racism is worse than COVID and that you must protest, which to me says, well, the COVID wasn't as bad as they said. So we were lied to.
No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Which is nothing new. But you had people in a state of fear about a disease that, I mean, I think is real, and obviously people have died, but you know, it was so ramped up. You see, you know, on the news, I think a lot of people would just really benefit from not watching the news for a while.
Yes.
Because they peddle fear.
They do. That's how they sell money. I mean, advertising is based off of fear.
Exactly. And, you know, you had people that were out of work, so they're fearful about how they're going to get money. You just, all around, there was something in there for everybody.
Yes.
And so this kicks off. And so you just had a powder keg of chaos ready just to, you know, be opened up upon the world.
Yeah. And then that goes at the same time where nobody trusts anyone who has a differing opinion.
Right.
So, I mean, if you can have, well, I'll just throw this out there. I'm a huge college football fan, and I'm originally from Oklahoma. And so Oklahoma University is my team. Most of the older fans are conservative by nature because most of them live in Oklahoma. Oklahoma is a red dog state, and so forth. And so for years, the CEO of Chick-fil-A has been like the hero within conservative Christian and conservative politics. And it's been him and the CEO of that home decorating company. I just lost the name of it, but my wife goes and buys her painting stuff there. Anyway.
Oh, the Fixer Upper.
Yeah. I can't think what it's called right offhand. But just the other day, the CEO was on a video thing with the pastor, Louis Giglio, in Passion City in Atlanta. The rap artist Lecrae, and it was funny. I hadn't watched the video. I didn't know anything about the video or anything, and so I'm on this Oklahoma University football message board, and we're supposed to be talking football. We just got a big recruit, and then all of a sudden, all these posts start coming up about how I will never eat at Chick-fil-A again. This guy is, he's always been, you know, a libtard and this and that. And it was only like 6 months ago, people were talking him up about how great of a CEO he was and of conservative values and of Christian values. And what it came down to was he polished the shoes of Lecrae in an attempt, and it was a poor attempt at that on his part, in an attempt to do kind of like a modern reproduction of Jesus washing the disciples' feet, if you will. The point, though, I think he was trying to make was a sense of showing humility. Mm-hmm. But what was so funny is because he didn't side with their point of view, a political point of view, by the way, that they perceived, since he didn't see this per se in a political way. They immediately attacked him, whereas 6 months ago they were praising him. And my point is when fear takes over everything that we are, our allies become our enemies the moment they disagree with us on one thing, because everything becomes politicized. Everything. And I mean, they were just the day before, they were talking about how evil the cancel culture has become. And now all of a sudden they're immediately canceling this guy out. They are participating in the very evil they were railing against the day before. And it was just interesting. It's very interesting how we react as human beings when we disagree with somebody in the midst of fear. One thing that I notice about humans is if we're in a state of peace, what the scriptures call shalom, where everything seems to be working together and melded together, we can function with disagreements. And mm-hmm. we can love one another in the disagreements. But when there is fear, there is this fight or flight mechanism that takes off inside of our brains. And we are either going to cancel the person out that disagrees with us, that's our flight mechanism, or we are immediately going to belittle them for disagreeing with us, and that's our fight mechanism. And it's crazy. We're tearing ourselves and our neighbors apart because we're afraid.
Yeah, and that kind of goes into that of a sound mind in 2 Timothy.
Yes.
It's not... You see people's reactions and it's not logical. And even recently you can feel it coming on, and it's almost like, I guess that's why they call it a spirit of fear, because it's something that comes over you and some people don't see it, but even if you can see it, it's still a hell of a thing to overcome.
It is. It is. It really attacks us in a way that we as humans have evolved. I mean,
it's very primal.
Yes, it is. And there's nothing wrong. If you are engaging something and wisdom tells you that what you're engaging is dangerous, that you should back away or you should protect yourself, that's built into us. That's just who we are as human beings. And we need that, or else we would always be running off of cliffs and killing ourselves, engaging things we shouldn't be engaging.
Oh, I'm going to go pet this pretty tiger.
Right, exactly. Exactly. Right. So a little bit of wisdom goes a long ways. So what happens is the spirit of fear attacks us there, and it amplifies and it turns everything into the boogeyman. Like anybody that disagrees, anybody that acts different, anybody that has a different opinion, a different viewpoint, or someone that's just not talking up. Maybe it's somebody that's just, being quiet. And now all of a sudden you perceive them because they're not talking up and agreeing with you. They immediately are on the other side and they must be destroyed.
Oh, yeah. That's the new thing now is silence is consent.
Yes. Right. 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 This isn't new. What we're going through as a country isn't new. There were many people that were silent during... our independence from Britain, people who came from Britain, lived in the Americas, and maybe mentally and emotionally they had chosen a side, but they chose for whatever reason not to engage in the battle. And because of that, they were seen as, evil from both sides. And that it happens all the time, unfortunately.
It does. I keep going back to the irrational behavior that it causes. You see it like in elections, they stir it up. When they're wanting to get something passed, they stir it up. When a tragedy happens, it gets stirred up. And it's all used to take away personal liberty and freedom and increase the power of the state.
Yep.
Which is a very evil tactic.
It is.
I mean, Saul Alinsky and Edward Bernays would be, patting each other on the back and popping champagne if they could see what was going on right now. You know, it gets to a point where if you can step back, and it's a struggle for me trying to get back in my faith and trying to walk that. It's a struggle for me right now, and I'll be honest with that. But the more I do it, the more I seem to be calmer mentally and, you know, physically. You just start to notice things. You kind of start to see the truth on the matter of what's going on. And when you say it, those same people that, like you said, who were supporting with the Dan Cathy.
Yes.
You know, days before will turn on them.
Right.
And not to say what he's saying was right or whatever.
You right.
know, it's irrelevant. But, you know, you'll say, well, is this really the problem? Could it be something deeper? They'll want to burn you at the stake.
Correct.
You know, when truth becomes treated as the lie.
Yeah. Yeah. And scripture is very clear that there, you know, there are times in history with human beings when a malevolent force takes over an entire system and culture, that which is good is considered evil, that which is evil is considered good, that which is truth is considered a lie, and that which is a lie is considered the truth. Mm-hmm. And that's where we're at right now. I mean, this is helter skelter. Everything is upside down. And truth, everybody has, I mean, this is part of the problem with the postmodern culture and the concept that, you know, everybody has their own truth. And then that creates tribes, and tribes always go to war.
They do. So, you know, for Christians, the spirit of fear, you know, we've all heard it. We all know what it is. But how would you explain it to someone who's not a believer?
Yeah, so I would explain it. I would try to explain it. It's a little bit difficult. But instead of thinking of a black shadowy figure that hides in your dreams, think about it as something that loves the collective, and it loves to engage in herd think tanks so that nobody can pinpoint where the thought is coming from, but it seems to come organically out of the whole. In other words, you could have 100 people that see the world differently, and when they come together to rule over 1 million people, something seems to engage them when they come together to make rules that then malevolently changes the way that they think. And it begins to pull them towards a centralized way of thinking. And then what happens is that thought begins to produce fear. And I would say this, that people that are affected by the spirit of fear, and it affects not just believers, it affects everyone. The majority of the time, we don't know that we are being affected because it feels so organic. It feels like it comes from within us. But this is where Paul comes in, and Paul teaches that we are to take every thought captive and make it obedient to the word of Christ. And so it invades our very thoughts, and it's very difficult sometimes to distinguish between, is this my thought? Is this the thought of Christ? Or is this something that's foreign that has invaded my thinking? If you're not used to, you know, putting that into practice to where you actually control your thoughts and think through them, then you're not going to even know what's going on. All you know is I'm in a panic and I'm in a fear. But this is a very real thing, and it's all over history. I mean, you think about this. I mean, in the beginning of the Soviet Union, the beginning of Nazi Germany. And these are modern examples that we can all go back to through our history books and understand, but it predates this by a long shot as well. But the way that a state can organize itself to control the masses is always through fear. And it's always through fear. But what's interesting about this is people will then begin to engage in the toxic fear, not because they feel evil, but because all of a sudden this fear takes control over their mind. And so one of the things that I think we need to look at here is human beings as fallen creatures, but in and of themselves, they are not this horrible force, but rather because of their fallen nature, they are susceptible to being moved and driven by malevolent spirits, malevolent beings. Paul calls them powers and cosmic authorities. That these things can invade us, invade our minds and our thoughts. And like puppets, they begin to pull the strings. So I may have a motivation to accomplish something that I believe is really good. And as a group of us get together to form, you know, like, okay, we're going to create a group of people in Seattle, and we're going to kick the police out, and we're going to show the world that the world can be run without any sort of state force, which is, I mean, so far, everything sounds good, no state force, and it's all going to be, you know, a utopia, per se. And then, you know, you'll have some people that's going to have, like, you know, an, maybe a communist anarchy feel to it. Others are going to have maybe a more of a capitalistic anarchy feel to it. And they all get together and they decide, okay, so how are we going to form this? Well, we don't want any leaders. This has to be leaderless. And that's perfect for a malevolent force here. Because now all of a sudden they start pulling themselves together. And what takes place is as they are meeting and working, this malevolent force, spirit of fear, begins to invoke fear in each one of them. And they end up creating policies that's going to drive fear and then create chaos. So, you know, you have this, I don't know if they call it CHAZ or CHOP now in Seattle. It goes by different names because there's already different factions arising within this group. What's going to end up happening, and there's no way of getting around it, what will end up happening is fear will take place amongst their own people. They then will react and create chaos. And that chaos is going to create more fear, which will create more chaos. And before long, you're going to have dead bodies. And you're going to have really hurt people. And I don't believe for an instant that the majority of them want that. But that is what will take place. Because this is what that spirit does. Once you start operating in that spirit of fear, it can do nothing else but create chaos. And when we react to chaos, it's always again in fear. So it just reproduces itself, one person from another person to another person, until death takes place.
Yeah, it's like a self-licking ice cream cone.
Yes, yes, absolutely. A self-licking ice cream cone, absolutely. And you know, really, the only cure for this is there's two steps that have to take place that the scriptures are very stern on, if you will, very explicit rather. And that is Proverbs 1 verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of all knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and discipline. So this idea of fear here, in towards the Lord himself. And yet, at the same time, you have that, and then you have this concept of God as a father and this unbelievable love. And so what's taking place, the best example I can give of this is with my oldest son. So when he was little, he's 22 right now. When he was, you know, a little bitty guy, all the way into his teenage years, when he would get in trouble with his mom, she'd always be like, hey, when dad gets home from the office, I'm going to let him know what you did. And he would just give her hell until I got home. And I'd get home and she would tell me what's up. And I'd walk into his room and I'd open the door and I'd look at him. And all I had to do was say his name. I'd say, Brandon. And right when I did that, that guy, he would literally just start shaking like a leaf. Now, I never abused this kid in my life. I would spank him. I didn't have any problem with that at all. But he was never physically abused a day in his life. And yet, he had this natural awe and reverence and knowledge that dad could do some damage on my behind. And so it would cause this shake. Along with that, if I ever said, you know, something like, you know, that brings me shame. Brandon, what you just did is shameful. He would instantly cry because he recognized that his actions brought shame to his dad. So I could make him shake in fear, and then 5 minutes later, he would be on my lap, sitting in my arms, and we'd be cuddling. Now, that's the relationship. This is what the scriptures talk about when it's referring to fear and God as a father. It is this concept that we are in fearful, awesome wonder of him, like we are a six-year-old kid looking up at our dads. There is a sense that he is bigger and more powerful and stronger. And at the same time, there is a comfort in that fear because we know that dad can protect us. Dad will keep us safe. And then, even if he disciplines us, we know that we can get into dad's lap 5 minutes later, and he's going to love us and care for us. So when you have this fear and this love of a father mixed together, that is the only thing that if you can rest your heart, your soul, your mind in that becomes the only thing that can actually protect you from a spirit of fear. Because when fear comes over you and that spirit of fear begins to attack you, we can look up at our Heavenly Father and say, "You've got my back. You're in control of this. No weapon formed against me shall prosper," is what the scripture says. There is nothing you're not sovereign over. You can handle this. And I'm just going to rest on your lap and be in comfort, knowing that you've got this under control. And it's in that state that you can begin to think with wisdom. You can begin to think, you know, rationally and begin to be creative in how do you solve problems. That's the only way that I can understand actually dealing with fear. I remember, when COVID first came out, my wife is a nurse practitioner, and we live in a rural community in North Iowa. We've been blessed in the sense that COVID hasn't done much of anything up here at all where I'm at. Yet there was this fear. My daughter had just come back from Columbia. She had to be tested. When she was tested, my wife could not be in the house with us. So I stayed in the house with my daughter. We had to presume that she would have contracted COVID through the airports because she went through multiple European airports in the airplane itself. When they got back, almost every one of the students felt horrible and sick. We didn't know really what all the symptoms were quite at that time. And so there was a presumption that we had to make that she had it. And therefore, somebody had to stay with her, so it was me. So there was a presumption that I'm going to have COVID. And then for 2 weeks, my wife had to live away from us. And there was a fear that came over me. Not that I was going to be sick, but there was just this sense of things have changed, and this isn't normal life anymore, and I don't like this. And I remember laying on my bedroom floor on my stomach, and just, God, help. What are we going, you know, what do I do? How does this work? And many of the Psalms just start pouring through my mind, but the one in particular is, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for your rod and your staff are with me. You lead me beside still waters. You make me pasture, you know, eat in green pastures. You prepare a table for me before my enemies. And as I was contemplating on that psalm, that spirit of fear just left me. I mean, it was just gone. And it was just this realization that in the midst of total hell, God's still there. He's still with us.
Yeah, the verse that came to mind when you were reading that was, "Before you were knitted together in your mother's womb, I knew you."
Yes, yes. So there has to be this sense. And this is why I can't blame any non-Christian for getting caught up into this, because the reality is they have nothing to hold on to.
As a Christian, I've gotten caught up in it.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. The difference being is, and you know, atheists and agnostics, and less agnostics, more atheists, will accuse Christians of using God as a crutch. And my response to that is, hell yes, he's a crutch. Every human being has to have a crutch. The difference is the crutch that I rely on has a tendency to bring life. The crutch of alcohol that many people rely on during times of fear has a tendency to bring cancer or liver damage or broken marriages or spousal or child abuse or drunk driving accidents. So every human being has a crutch to deal with fear, one way or the other. The difference being is the crutch that I rely on brings life. It doesn't just create more fear and chaos. It actually brings life.
That's true. And, you know, that comes with developing a relationship.
Yes.
There's a quote from Martin Luther King Jr. said, men often hate each other because they fear each other. Mm. They fear each other because they do not know each other.
Right.
They do not know each other because they cannot communicate.
True.
And they cannot communicate because they are separated.
Hmm. That's good. That is a good quote.
That's pretty heavy. If you're separated from God, you can't hear him because you can't communicate because you're separated.
Right.
If you apply that to the population in general, you know, you have the state and the media that separate us by race, color, creed, economic status. You know, they put us in all these boxes and boxes within boxes and then pit us against each other. So yep. so that we fear each other and hate each other so that we're not paying attention to what the state is doing.
Correct.
And then the state, which wants to be worshipped, creates the situation to be worshipped.
Yes.
And I think that's why you see such a push to tear down statues, to rewrite history, all in the name of solidarity or honoring something. But it's a lie. You know, there's the old saying that if you don't know your history, you're doomed to repeat it.
Right.
A lot of the statues, sure, those people may not have been great people or they may have done bad things. But if you don't take the time and look at it and study and see what was the good and the bad, then you can never learn.
Right. Right. I mean, there's a totally different way of doing this. You know, allowing mob rule is never going to be safe. It's never good because mob rule is always influenced by a spiritual being. It's never just a one person has an idea and everybody follows and turns into a mob. There is a principality behind mob rule. I'll say this. I believe that behind the motives of individuals within the government and media is two things, money and power. I believe that behind them, though, is something more malevolent, and its motivation is worship. It desires to be worshiped. And so
that's the original sin, the original fall.
Yes. It desires to be worshiped. And the way that it can do this, you see, the enemy doesn't care what team you're on, so long as you will sell your soul to that team, because behind both political teams is the same malevolent force. And it just wants you to bow down before it. It wants you to serve it. And the way that it is most worshiped is not through life. It is not through creation and creativity. It's not through beauty. It is through death. It is through destruction. And so I see this all the time right now within the Christian church, where the Christianity has become so maligned with state. And now you have liberal Christians and conservative Christians, which makes no freaking sense to me whatsoever. I mean, Jesus couldn't be in either camp. It'd be impossible for him to be in either camp. He would piss both of them off all the time. And yet we align ourselves based off of political, philosophical principles. And then we began to clash and beat heads against one another to try to win some sort of battle. And what's taking place, the political leaders are getting rich and more powerful off of this. And then behind them, this principality is being worshiped through the chaos and the destruction and the death. It's the same thing as when we, years and years and hundreds and thousands of years ago, as a human race, would take our children and lay it in the arms of a bronzen statue that had a fire inside of it. And we'd lay our children and sacrifice them to this deity. We're doing the same thing right now within politics. So we bow to the flag, we worship the eagle, and if our Messiah isn't elected, we're doomed. And so now every presidential election is the most important presidential election in my lifetime, apparently. And everybody they put up there is a Messiah figure, apparently, even though they're both stupid and ignorant people.
Highly compromised.
Yes, highly compromised. No integrity, no intelligence. But yet they are the Messiah figure. So if you're on the left, Joe Biden's going to save you from the warlord that is Trump. And if you're on the right, Trump is the only person that can save America and make it great again. And so they have become Jesus. Each one of them are now the replacement of Jesus. And our politics is the new church. Your denomination is you're a Democrat or you're a Republican. Mm-hmm. And then you hate one another. And that becomes our worship. And so people virtue signal all over social media so they can make sure their team knows they are righteous and virtuous in their religion. And it is the new post-Christian religion.
Yeah, and you see, I don't know if you saw that meme. I didn't make the meme. I shared it, but it got shared a lot. And it had the people, the businesses that were putting BLM in the window, but replace that with anything, any virtue signal.
Yep.
And it's like in the Old Testament where they painted the lamb's blood above the door.
Right.
It's like that, you go to vote, there's religious, what's the word I'm trying to say? If you've ever been to the Catholic mass and there's rituals, that's the one I'm looking for.
Yeah. Rituals and liturgy.
Yeah. Your voting polls or, the synagogues and your state capitals or churches. And it's crazy.
It is. It absolutely is.
When they separated church and state, it was so that, that was all based off the Church of England, how they used that religion,
it was a political force.
Yeah. As a political force to exert power. And I grew up in Baptist and it was all hellfire and brimstone. And it was that pastor using fear to keep people from sin.
Right.
But now, when they separated church and state, the state just built its own church.
It did. It did. And it sold us into buying into it. And so we absolutely as a nation have. It is the fastest growing and the number one religion in the United States. And the majority of Christians have a syncretized religion. It is, they are first and primarily their party or a patriot, you might say. And then secondly, they bring Jesus into that. And so long as Jesus fits within that viewpoint, their political viewpoint, it's good. When Jesus gets out of line from there, then that portion of Jesus, we just eradicate and erase and just forget that it exists.
Mm-hmm. That's how you see all these atrocities throughout history.
Yes.
Instead absolutely. Of, Jesus doesn't fit in a box.
No.
Jesus is the box.
He is the box. We're to fit in him.
Yeah. If what you're wanting to do doesn't fit in there, you don't do it. It's not the other way around.
Correct.
I was, just reading different things, specifically to Americans, but you could apply this to anyone. But, it's a Martha Gellhorn. I'm going to have to read more into, what she's written, but I really liked this passage. And it says, Americans did not acquire their fear neurosis as a result of traumatic experience, war devastating their country, pestilence sweeping the land, famine wiping out helpless millions. Americans had to be taught to hate and fear an unseen enemy. The teachers were men in official positions in government, men whom Americans normally trust without question.
Correct. Yeah, even the war on terror is all based on this same principle.
The unseen boogeyman.
Yeah, we don't know who it is.
Even Trump called the COVID the invisible enemy.
Yes, right. Yeah, it's
an enemy that can't be quantified or seen or touched or felt or overcome. Right. It's just, oh my gosh, it's gross.
it is. It is gross. And then that fear captivates our hearts and our imaginations. And then we begin to despise anybody who isn't afraid like us or has a different fear than us. And it just, it's wrecking havoc. It's absolutely wrecking havoc. And what's interesting is it's everywhere right now. It's not just an American problem right now. It's global. It's happening everywhere at the exact same time. And this is why I think it becomes very clear that there is something behind it. Something that is, you know, the Christians or Paul would refer to as the principalities or the cosmic powers. And that is that there is something that is moving and directing the hearts and imaginations of men towards a place of fear to create chaos and destruction. And we're going hook, line, and sinker with it.
Yeah. And, you know, and the consequence of all this fear is just hate.
Yes.
It is, you know, it's so simple and it just keeps coming back. You know, what was it, Star Wars? Fear leads to hate. Hate leads to anger. Or no, I'm sorry. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
Yes.
It's the path of the dark side.
Right. Right. It's crazy. And you think, and then, so as Christians, we have these incredible commands by Jesus: love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself. What happens if your neighbor is your enemy? Well, then Jesus says, well, love your enemy. You know, love your enemy. Do good to those who would persecute you. Bless those who would speak against you. How do you do that when you are full of fear and you believe that if you act in any other way than flight or fight, that you are empowering your enemy? You can't. So this is the beautiful thing about Christ is he believed that you overcome evil by good. You don't overcome chaos with chaos. You overcome chaos by loving your enemy and doing good to those who would hurt you.
The kindness to your enemy is like pouring hot coals over their head.
Yes. Yes. Right. It's crazy. I love this passage in Philippians chapter 4. It's verse 6. It says, do not be anxious about anything, but in everything, by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God, and the peace of God, which surpasses all understanding, will guard your hearts and your minds in Christ Jesus. So in other words, when you're anxious and you have this fear, you go to the Father knowing that he is the sovereign. He is the one who breathed the stars into existence. And at the same time, he is the one who allows you on his lap and he cares for you. And then just make your request known. And he will give you a peace that surpasses all understanding. That's where we as the church have to get back to, is rather than making our requests known on Facebook and Twitter, we need to begin to make our supplication, God, I am afraid. You know, instead of publicizing our fear all over the world, we need to begin to publicize it to God and then to rest in him and allow him to change that fear into a peace.
And then that peace is what we're supposed to share with the world.
Right. Then we can go to Facebook or Twitter.
Yeah.
Crazy, man.
It is. It is. And the thing is, you know, what we both are trying to do respectively is lead people out of bondage.
Yes.
Political bondage, spiritual bondage, physical bondage, all of these things. And fear is the chains that bind you.
Right. Right. You know, part of the gospel message is in Isaiah chapter 52, I believe it's verse 7. It's the definition of the gospel in Old Testament terms. And it says, Yahweh reigns. He reigns over his enemies. And so there is this concept that on the cross, Christ disarmed the principalities and powers. That's in the book of Colossians. And that he now reigns over these cosmic powers. He has authority over them. And so one of the things that we have to begin to remember is he's in control, and that my salvation, my life is in him. And I don't have to be in bondage to fear. He's already won that victory for me. I can make my request known to him, and he will, he promises me, he will give me peace. And so these powers that control us are defeated. The only reason they have any influence over us is because we give it to them. We give up our lives to them rather than giving our lives to Christ. Mm-hmm. He has the victory over this. That spirit of fear doesn't have to operate within us. It doesn't have to. The only reason it does is because we give into it.
Yeah, we allow it.
Yes.
It's just like outrage or being offended.
Right.
You can only be offended if you allow someone to offend you. It's I can't remember who God was sending in to preach, and he said, if they reject you, I'm going to paraphrase, but it says, they're not rejecting you, they're rejecting me. So don't, right. You know, don't take it personally.
Right. Right.
Just do what I ask of you.
Right. Yeah. We've got to have some thick skins. I mean, Americans need to get over themselves.
Yeah.
We've got to get some thicker skin. It's getting ridiculous. It's getting dangerous. I'm not a huge Joe Rogan fan, but he had, can't think of his last name, the two twin brothers that,
the Hodge twins.
Well, no, Jewish guys.
Oh, Brett and Brett Weinstein.
Weinstein, yeah.
He was on there recently. I listened to that one. It was very...
Yeah. So probably the same one where he was talking about, you know, the only outcome of this that he can see is some form of eventual civil war. Mm-hmm. And the reality is if we continue to live in fear, that is what will happen. That's the end goal of this spiritual force.
That's the ultimate chaos.
Yes. Yes, bring it down to a place of primordial, chaotic, you know, the waters flooding over the world type of thing, and that's what it wants. And for believers, we have the victory over that in Christ if we will just give it over to the Lord and trust and rest in Him, and then get over being offended, get over being afraid, and allow His peace to take over us. It doesn't mean don't walk in wisdom. Listen, if somebody said to me, hey, Stephen, here's a room full of 900 people and 800 of them have COVID-19. Would you mind walking in there? I'm going to be like, no, it's okay. I'm all right. But, you know, if somebody said to me, here's a room of 900 people and 800 of them had the flu, would you mind walking in there? Again, I'm going to be like, a little wisdom says, no, I'm okay. I'm good. Mm-hmm. You know, so we don't need to test the Lord and be cocky and arrogant. We need to live with wisdom, but we don't have to be afraid. There is no need to live in fear right now.
No, it's like in Galatians 5:1, stand fast, therefore, in liberty, wherewith Christ hath made us free, and not be entangled again with the yoke of bondage.
Yes, yes. That's Paul says it better than anything I could. Well done, Paul.
The OG. But yeah, and that's just what it's about, you know, it's about liberty. You know, you see certain themes in the Bible. You know, how often is fear mentioned?
All the time.
A lot. And then, you know, it's a triumph over fear.
Yes.
And over chaos. And you see it in, you know, other writers, not just in Christianity, just people who all over, from George Washington Carver, you know, he said fear is something at the root of hate for others, and hate within will eventually destroy the hater.
Mm.
You know, that's kind of like the gospel of forgiveness. It's not, you're not forgiving someone for their benefit. You're forgiving them for your benefit, because if you don't, it's going to eat you up.
Right. Right.
And just like hate and anger, you know, anger itself, you know, that's discussed a lot in the Bible too. And, you know, there's things that it's righteous to be angry about something,
mm-hmm.
but it's what you do with that anger.
Correct.
That determines, just like fear is, what do you do with that fear? Do you use it to mitigate danger or risk, or do you give into it and create danger and risk?
Right. Right. Yeah. Yep, absolutely. I mean, liberty is a huge theme throughout Scripture. From the very beginning, you have the world that is in chaos and God liberates it. You have the cosmic waters over the face of the waters over the face of the deep, and spirit brooding over it, and God through words begins to bring order out of this chaos. And you have the story of the Hebrew people in slavery and bondage to the Egyptians and the Exodus. And that is the theme of the Jewish faith. I mean, everything is wrapped around the Exodus within the Jewish faith. You have this concept of a Messiah that is going to come and set people free and take them out of the bondage of slavery. And then you have Jesus coming and proclaiming out of Isaiah, you know, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me to preach the gospel to the poor, to set at liberty those who are captive, to bring sight to the blind. And he says, and this has been fulfilled in your hearing today. This whole theme is that we are, as human beings, are in bondage to these elemental spiritual beings, these principalities. And God has become flesh to become one of us, to gain victory over them in our place, so that we can live in freedom in his kingdom, in his authority, in his life, in his way. But to get there, there is a choice that we have to make. It's like two armies going to battle, and one has won the victory, and you've been on the other side all your life. And the victor says, listen, you can share in this victory. Just leave. Come over to our side. Come be with us. We love you. We'll treat you the same. You'll immediately be a citizen. Just walk out. Walk away. And that's the decision that people have to make. Am I willing to give myself over to this one who has won the victory for me? Or do I want to stay in bondage and live in this place of fear?
Hashtag walk away.
That's a good one. I like
that. It's already been taken by something else, but yeah, it's a similar idea. And that's the life's journey, is journey out of bondage.
It is. And every step on that journey is a decision. Mm-hmm. Will I align myself with the King who has won the victory for me so that I can live in victory and live in freedom? Or will I maintain my bondage? And the reality is, we live in bondage because we love bondage. Mm-hmm. Like, nobody ever chooses one day and says, you know, like, I'm going to wake up and be a homeless person and be a crack addict or a heroin addict or, anything like that. Or one day I'm going to be an abuser of children or abuser of my wife. Or nobody makes that decision as a kid. What happens is that you fall in love with a bondage and you decide that bondage is more valuable to you than anything else. And then it destroys you. So at some point we have to make a decision. Is our fear, do we love our fear? Do we enjoy being afraid and spreading what we're afraid of more than we love freedom?
Mm-hmm. I mean, look at the country. You know, I don't think the government on a large scale could forcibly remove our freedoms and our liberties. They do to a certain extent, you know, through the criminal justice system and things like that. And that's not what this episode's about, but they create through fear, through chaos, they create a situation to where people beg for their rights to be taken away, for their liberty to be taken away.
Yep. Yeah. Well, I mean, do you remember
the upside down?
Homeland Security, all this stuff that was passed, you know, under Bush 2. The Patriot Act. I mean, everybody was like, yeah, let's do that. Let's just give up all of our freedom so that we can be protected. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And again, that is a form of worship. I am giving you everything that I have that was rightfully given to me by my Creator. I'm turning it over to you because I believe you are the only one that can protect me. That is the only being we are allowed to do that to is God Himself. And yet we humbly get on our knees and bow our head to the state and say, you are the mighty one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they demand it. The fealty.
Yep.
They say, oh, well, if you have a differing opinion, I've been called libtard, Trump worshiper, all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, neither.
Yeah. No, I hear you.
And it's like, no, I'm not a fan. Oh, okay. Well, that's good. Well, I go, don't get it twisted. I don't like your guy either. I don't like any of them, you know. I have to really credit my wife. I don't do that enough, but we were just talking and she cannot stand, she hates politics with a passion. And she's like, why am I going to worry about something I have no control over? She goes, because if I do, then I feed into it. Mm-hmm. Then I give it legitimacy. They can pass whatever they want. I may not like it, but I can't do anything about it. She said, the only thing that I can legitimize that's worth legitimizing is God. And she's like, so I choose.
Wise woman.
She's very. She's like, so I choose to put my energy in that relationship because because all this is going to be gone one day.
Yes.
She goes, so there's no sense. The birds of the field worry about what they're going to eat. No, God takes care of them just the same.
Yes. Yes.
And
that was the exact scripture I was thinking of.
When I had that conversation with her, I immediately felt better. And it's peace.
Yeah.
There's no feeling like it.
Yeah. No, I mean, and think about this. This is what every one of us have the potential to do. What your wife did for you was instead of feeding you fear, she fed you the word of God.
Yeah. Which is peace.
And that brought you peace.
Yeah.
Right. And as Christians, and listen, like I said, I cannot get onto a non-believer for living in fear. I can't. They don't really have much of a choice in that. But for a Christian, I can. Because our job is to spread the peace of the good news that Christ reigns, that Yahweh has become king through the work of his servant Jesus. Mm-hmm. And when I or any other believer partakes in disseminating fear, we are working against our king. We have become the enemy by choice.
Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think, well, if that's the case, then why do bad things happen to Christians? Well, sure. Nowhere in the Bible does it say you will not experience struggle or death. In fact, Jesus says specifically, pick up your cross and follow
me. Right. If they persecuted me, why would they not persecute you? He says.
Right. The difference is you have a light.
Right.
To find your way out of the darkness.
Right. We are in a battle. There is a war that's taking place. But it is a war against peace and chaos, the kingdom of peace and the kingdom of chaos. Mm-hmm. And when we intentionally spread peace, which gives liberty to people, when we do that, we are coming against these cosmic forces. And at the same time, we are coming against the fear that the state always pushes. And so what you end up having is you will have persecution. You will have a spiritual persecution and you will have a physical persecution. If you walk in the way of the Lord, bad crap is going to happen. But at the same time, you are participating in rebuilding this world and bringing peace to it. You are participating in with the kingdom of peace. So we have an option, right? Like we can live in fear and bad stuff happen to us, or we can live in peace and sometimes bad stuff will happen to us. Mm-hmm. Either way, we're all going to die. It's just going to happen.
I guarantee it eventually.
Right. Right. I mean, that's the one thing I can promise to every single person that's listening. We're all going to die. Mm-hmm. I can promise another thing. At some point in our life, we're going to experience suffering, no matter mm-hmm. who you are. So you have your choice. Do you spread peace? You'll die and you'll experience suffering, but you live in peace and you're spreading peace and you're making the world better. Or do you spread fear and you'll die and you're going to experience suffering, but you're also going to bring on suffering in your own mind, in your own heart, and you're going to be spreading that chaos as well. Which one do you want?
Struggle builds character as well.
It does.
And perseverance.
It does.
And you see, there's an entire generation, possibly two, that think that people disagreeing with them is oppression, that struggle is oppression, that having to work for things is oppression. And it's like, no, that's just life.
Yeah.
It's just life, man. It's like,
that's how you grow up and mature. That's what it does to us.
We're created to work and toil and create and build. And then what you see now is just people that have no concept of creating, of what it takes to create, of what it takes to maintain, what it takes to, it's easy to hate. It's easy to be scared. It's a struggle to love.
Yes.
It's a struggle to build. And, you know, a lot of times it's struggling within yourself. And I think a lot of times, and, you know, I'm not immune. I deal with this too, is when you have to look, instead of placing all of your problems on an external factor, and not to say that those don't exist, but the defeat comes with from within.
It does. It's a choice.
Yeah. And so if you have to examine yourself, that's a scary thing to do. And people are afraid to realize that they're wrong.
Right.
I didn't come to voluntarism until I was 39. You know?
Yep.
That's a lifetime that I had to sit there back and reflect over.
No, definitely. Definitely.
And so if I can do it at 39, you 20 somethings can do it. Suck it up.
There you go.
Get some calluses on your hands.
Yes. Seriously.
So, I just got a couple of things here. We're at about a little bit hour and a quarter here. And I don't want to take up your whole Saturday, but I could sit in here and talk to you all day. Do you, off the top of your head, do you have any, you know, obviously the Bible talks a lot about fear, and I'll get to a question about that in a second, but do you have any recommendations as far as like maybe literature, books, things like that, that would help people to, you know, start to look at fear and for what it really is?
Mm.
I don't know if that question makes sense.
No, it does. It does. I don't have any books right off hand. This is what I would say. Grab up a couple really good autobiographies, pretty much on anybody that is considered somewhat successful. That's probably dead too. Like get dead guys. I like dead guys best. And just look at all the stuff that they had to go through in their life and the things that they had to work through to get to where they are. And when, as we begin to study the lives of others and begin to see that they have traversed the same grounds that we are walking on, that life, you know, nothing's new under the sun. Life is life. It's chaos right now, but it's been chaos before. And to see that people have made it through and realize that this is nothing new. You're not living in a new experience. That we all have these shared experiences and that people have made it through. So I would just pick up some autobiographies. I think that would be wise. As far as theological works, not really. I would say this, that if you want to understand how God deals with the human emotion and how we can control our emotions, I would just grab the book of Psalms and just read the book of Psalms, because throughout the Psalms, every single human emotion is displayed to God and is answered by God. So I would go there.
Mm-hmm. And I would probably follow that up with Proverbs.
Yeah, Proverbs is good, specifically for wisdom and fear.
Yeah. Well, that's awesome. That leads right into my next question. What translations do you recommend?
Oh, yeah. I'm not a big anti-translation person. I think most of them out there have their purpose, and so forth. And they were mostly created for intentionally for a purpose. Mm-hmm. So if I'm studying or if I'm preaching, I would recommend the English Standard Version. If you're an English speaking person, if you're Hebrew or if you can speak Hebrew or Greek, I would just go with the original language. You're better off. But being that most everybody listening to this is probably going to be primary English, that's how I use ESV. If I'm looking devotionally to where I just want to sit and meditate in it and kind of read it as a story, I use New Living Translation. And every now and then, if I want to read it kind of like a novel and just kind of delve into it like it's a book, I'll go with like Eugene Peterson's The Message. Mm-hmm. But most often I'm an English Standard Version guy.
Okay. I've got a Quest Study Bible, NIV.
Yeah, absolutely.
But, which I need to pick up more often. One resource that I found that's kind of neat in that you can cross-reference, because certain translations will translate words differently. And if you know, definitions of words matter. We're seeing that now, you know, they're trying to change the definitions of words.
Yep.
But is blueletterbible.org.
Blueletterbible.org is awesome. That is a great online resource and it's free.
It's free. And you can do word searches, verse searches, subject searches, and you can cross-reference to different translations.
Yes.
And you can find original, like that sounds weird, you know, you can look up, you know, what the words actually mean and find the original translation as well.
Right.
And it'll even read it to you.
Yes, it will. It is. And if you have lots of money to just throw away, Logos made by Faith Life is that's the program I use. It's a couple grand, but it's a nice one. I've got 800 different translations, including original language, at my disposal, along with right around 1,000 different commentaries.
So wow,
it's pretty nice. But it you need some money to throw away if you got it.
Yeah, well, a lot of work went into it.
Yeah.
If you have time for one question.
Yeah, go for it.
This is from my wife. How do you tell if it's God leading you to do something versus your internal desire mechanism?
Yeah.
You know,
I get this a lot. Like, is this God's will for my life? What is God calling me to do or to be? I get that a lot.
If you're making the decision in fear, it's not God.
Very true. Good point. Here's the way I used to over-spiritualize this question, but now it's pretty simple, I think. You have to ask yourself a couple questions. What was the purpose of your creation? So scripture says, God said, let us make man in our image and our likeness. So our original purpose was to image him. Like a child would image their parent, and you become most proud when your child does something that images your own personality, your own character. So we're to image our Father. Image the Creator. And then Jesus kind of interpreted it like this. He said, love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, soul, and strength, and then love your neighbor as yourself, love your enemy. So image God and who he is. And then the second one is the Great Commission, and that is to go into all the world and make disciples. So on the question of, is God leading me in this direction? I always do it this way. Do I have peace? So is there absolute peace? In doing it, do I have the ability to image my Creator? And in doing it, am I able to make disciples? If I can answer yes to all three of those, then it's God's will. I don't need a magical word. I don't need a prophet to come up and tell me. If I have peace, if I am capable of imaging God through it and I can make disciples, then it's God. It's a go.
Well said. And I think that's a really good breakdown. And I think that is a great place to wrap up.
All right. Hey, I have one last thing I do want to say. It just came to me a little while ago. And that is to all the listeners out there, it'd be great if you guys could think of yourselves as a farmer. And a farmer has the potential, you know, to grow and create. And so during this time, we have the potential to either create something that brings life or to create something that suffocates and destroys life. So in our mouths and on through our fingertips with social media, we have the potential to either plant peace and which brings people deliverance from fear, or we can plant fear, which then strangles peace and creates chaos and destroys life. And so every one of you that are listening today, those two options are in your hands. And it's a choice you have to make every single day, every single word, every single thought. Am I planting the peace of God that will bring liberty to others? Or am I planting fear that will cause chaos and choke out life? And that's a decision you have to make. Nobody can make this for you. And it's a decision that God puts on us individually. I'll leave it there.
Yeah, that hit me square in the chest. That's something I'm trying to be better at, you know, personally, is trying not to. And I haven't gone back and taken down tweets, but I used to be a real jerk. And
I don't think you need to go back and take down tweets.
No, I'm leaving them there.
I think, you know, it's kind of the same way with the statues, right? Like, we can go back and look at that stuff and say, you know what? Maybe we erected it for the wrong reason. And maybe the guy did total crap things.
Mm-hmm.
but we can learn from this. And let this statue be a reminder of who we don't want to be. So let this tweet be a reminder of who I do not ever want to be.
Exactly. 100%. Well, Pastor Steve, I appreciate you coming on again, and hopefully we can do it again next month.
Absolutely, buddy. Absolutely. I appreciate it.
All right.